Illegally Deaf is a podcast about overcoming obstacles. I'm Danny Burnside, and just this year, I was diagnosed with severe hearing loss. Oh, did I mention I'm a professional Hollywood voice actor? Funny how that goes. I've made the decision to own my disability and interview remarkable guests who are thriving in light of being disabled. Welcome to the Illegally Deaf Podcast. DJ Bob, how you doing, brother?
How are you, my friend?
Fantastic. Bob, I saw a picture of you on your website. You are like super young on mic. That's the coolest shot I've ever seen in my life.
Thank you, dude.
How old are you in that picture?
13.
Honestly, man, it's super cool. And to see it side by side of you present day is pretty impressive. It's impressive that you were interested in broadcasting at such a young age.
Even prior to that pic, we'll get into that.
Okay, we'll get into that. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest today is DJ Bob Runkle. DJ Bob was born 3 months premature and diagnosed with spastic quadriplegia cerebral at the age of 2. At 15 years old, as I alluded to, he created the DJ Bob Show. It's a podcast that focuses on pop culture, and a big emphasis of the show is diversity and inclusion. In his words, DJ Bob is, quote, living his childhood dream. Man, that's cool, Bob. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you so much, man.
Tell us how you got interested in broadcasting at such a young age.
I kind of attribute it to the environment that I was in. I couldn't really play outside that much as a kid due to my physical limitations. I have two older sisters. They grew up in the TRL generation, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC. They were listening to the pop music of the day. So was I. So you would find me watching Nickelodeon, but then you'd find me watching MTV Spring Break.
I can relate to that, Bob, because I have an older brother. I'm technically a millennial. I'm right on the edge of being a millennial. I'm technically a millennial. Based on my experience, I'm really more Generation X because I had an older brother as well.
I was in their world so much that I was living it with them. So like whenever a new album would come out, I'd go to Sam Goody or whatever and purchase the latest CD. So it was always in my blood and I would listen to the local top 40 station, wonder how they did that. And I would record radio shows on my cassette recorder. That was just what I did.
I love that image of you recording a radio show on a cassette recorder. That is true passion.
I always say that people my age or a little older are the last generation to experience everything at once before the internet really took over.
We grew up in an analog age, and then in our teenage years, that transformed to a digital age. So we understand both sides of that equation. I actually miss physical media. Like you mentioned going to Sam Goody. I used to go to the Warehouse Music. We weren't around in the age of vinyl, which is like true physical media, but we had CDs. I loved the cover art of the CDs. I loved the show notes in the CDs.
I still buy CDs.
I love that you do that. Even just following along with the lyrics, which were printed in a lot of CD booklets. That is so cool. And I feel like, unfortunately, kids this day and age aren't getting that.
Digital media goes away. Physical media, you have a hard copy of it. You have it. It's yours.
I'm a big believer of that, even for video games. I don't know if you like video games, but I've been a gamer my entire life. I exclusively buy physical when possible. As a matter of fact, just this year, Sony announced they were taking down a bunch of digital purchases from their online store. It was actually, I think, for a streaming service rather than a video game. But they were not only stopping to sell that specific channel's materials, they were taking away it from your account, meaning had you already purchased it digitally and it was in your account, they literally were taking it away. Yeah, so guys, you gotta buy physical media. It's the only way to protect your investment.
They say that it's yours, but it's not.
You are renting a license when you buy digital media. That's what you're doing. You're renting a license. Physical media, you own it. So Bob, you were diagnosed at 2 years old. I looked this up on Google. Correct me if this is incorrect at all, but spastic quadriplegic cerebral palsy is a permanent neuromuscular disorder causing inflammation on all four limbs following a lesion on the developing brain. Is that essentially what happened to you at 2 years old?
Yes.
Did you and your parents notice any signals or signs of that condition before the diagnosis?
They noticed that, I mean, of course, I was too young to even realize, you know, I've quote-unquote interviewed my mom since then. They just noticed that I was right on target in other ways, cognitively hitting all those benchmarks. But when it came to physical things, they noticed things were a little off.
Is this a hereditary condition at all, or is this just a random occurrence that the lesion on the brain develops?
It happens a lot in premature babies. You know, their brain doesn't fully develop. Cerebral palsy is a brain disorder.
So at 2 years old, did they have to perform an operation to remove that lesion?
No, it's just there.
Interesting. Wow.
The real technical part of it, I don't really think about because it's just me when you put it in those terms. Wow.
Sometimes we do step back and look at our own situation and say, wow.
You know, everybody goes through things. Everybody has their moments of, I wish I could do this or I wish I could do that. I talked a little bit earlier about me not being able to play outside as a kid, but I feel that gave me a kind of a leg up because I had all this time to focus on my craft.
Necessity is the mother of all invention. Due to your physical limitations, it became necessary for you to focus and grow other talents and crafts. And for you, that happened to be your broadcasting talent.
Yeah.
Now, the DJ Bob Show has like over 1,000 episodes. I think you created this show in 2010 and you're still running the show. Super impressive.
Thank you, dude.
Most people create a podcast, and let's be honest, Bob, a month or two later, that podcast is dead, right?
They call that pod fade.
I think the principle is true across everything in life. You know, you jump on the bandwagon of a new hobby or passion and you are all in, right? The degree all in moment. You are pushing your chips to the middle of the table. And then all of a sudden, a month or two later, after you bought all the equipment, spent a couple $1,000, you're not even thinking about that hobby anymore. Coming back to your childhood, must have been rough on your parents and siblings. I know you said you interviewed your mom. Has she alluded to any challenges that her and your dad went through when they realized that their precious son was diagnosed with this condition?
It was a worry for them, but they said, hey, this is the card we're dealt with. Let's give him the best life we can give him. They never were like, oh no, what are we going to do? They just kind of said, all right, this is what it is. And we have to learn to give him the best life.
Chatting with a good friend of mine, and his son was diagnosed with autism. And he was telling me about the process that him and his wife were going through. And at the beginning, they were resisting the notion, resisting the diagnosis. But eventually, they talked and said, you know, that attitude is so not helpful. Whereas it is helpful when you accept the reality and take the necessary steps to give that kid the best life possible.
Yeah, my fiance also has cerebral palsy too. She's been through so much other things. She's got a visual impairment, all these other ailments. And I'm like, I'm kind of lucky, but I'm on the journey with her, so I'm a part of it too. I'm lucky because I don't have as much as this person does. Everybody has their own set of problems. There's always this comparing and contrasting in the disability community, and that has to stop.
Well said, man, and congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you.
Where did you grow up, Bob?
I grew up and I'm still living in Long Island, New York. Ironically, I've never been to New York City due to my physical limitations, so I gotta get out there.
You mentioned that you enjoy listening to the top 40 here and there. Who were some of your broadcasting influences growing up and maybe even towards present day?
Oh, Casey Kasem.
Me too, brother. That's my number one.
He told a story like no one else could. He was just talking to you. He wasn't presenting to you. One of my other broadcasting inspirations is a guy by the name of Rick Adams, and he was the host of a children's internet radio show on the AOL network called Radio KOL from 2003 to 2007. And I called into that show so much that he knew me. One day, he'd be like, okay, you're calling so much, we're giving you a DJ name. I'm gonna call you DJ Bob.
That's awesome, man.
And that was when I was 12 years old. Cut to years later, he's living in LA, but he has to do a piece in New York, 15 minutes from my house. And he goes, can I stop by for dinner? And I'm just like, what am I gonna say? No.
No, I'm watching Golden Girls reruns that night. Sorry.
Yeah. So it's so weird to be friends with somebody that really you would not be talking to me without that show, without him.
That's really, really cool. love how you mentioned that Casey Kasem told the story. For my money, in art, it's all and exclusively about telling the story. It's all about telling the story in film, TV, voiceover, theater, music, painting, sculpting, dance. Every single art form is about telling the story. That differentiates wonderful artists from amateur artists.
For years, I had been listening to this syndicated radio show since I was 4 years old. I finally met this guy after I idolized him for years, and I asked him, having a disability, could you be in the radio industry? Could I be a top 40 jock? And he said, no. He said, no, you can't do it because it would take too much time for people to understand you. And I said, what? Like, isn't that an outdated way of thinking, or am I nuts?
And a reductive way of thinking.
I heard that, and I was so disheartened.
Bob, how old were you when he said that to you?
It was 2 years ago.
Wow, come on, dude. You've been running your show since 2010. He said that to you 2 years ago?
You want to meet somebody, and then they say that.
I don't like limitations. I don't like it when people put us in a box. You can do this, you can't do that, period. Goodness, I hate that attitude.
Honestly, if I heard a top 40 jock with, like, vocal imperfections, if you will, it would give me all the more reason to listen to it so I could learn and become attached to them as a listener.
1,000% agreed. I think it makes you unique. It actually makes you stand out from the crowd.
The reason why I did this podcast is because I couldn't commit to a weekly schedule. I was working for different radio stations. I was a top 40 jock at first. The DJ Bob show was originally a 4-hour live show. I was taking phone calls, playing jingles. You'll love this. All the reverb you can handle on my voice. I was that top 40 jock that I'd idolized. And then my dear friend, CJ Malm, who was my boss at the time, said to me, look, I love you, but you can't commit to a weekly schedule. You're missing shows. You're not delivering them on time. Why don't you do a podcast where you could do it on your own timetable and nobody can tell you different?
That's great advice.
He could have been like, you're not doing well at my staging. You're gone. But he gave me advice because he knew that this wasn't working. And it wasn't. So eventually, in 2014, I started the podcast iteration of this show.
He gave you an alternative path that you could capitalize on. He didn't just shut you down. He said, you know what? This specific path might not be working, but what about this path? And it obviously is working for you.
Yeah. And he's like a brother, you know. I thought it was terrible what he was saying at the time. I was so young, but now I'm like, you know what? He's right.
Bob, what do you like about talk radio versus music radio?
It's a lot less editing.
Love it.
No, but while you're on that topic, I never used to talk about my disability on the podcast, if ever. Never. And it's not because I was ashamed of it either. I just never found it important. I just wanted the show to speak for itself. I never said, I'm not going to talk about it because X, Y, and Z. It just never came up. And then when I started talking about it, it created a dialogue between me and the guest that they wouldn't otherwise have.
I think it makes you incredibly relatable. The fact that you are just so openly laying it all out like that to your listeners.
Can I share a quick story about an interview that I did?
Yeah, please.
I did an interview with, he's an actor, Tom Everett Scott. Tom was in that movie, That Thing You Do with Tom Hanks. These actors, they don't talk about disability all the time. But when I open up the conversation to these people that are not privy to it, they can learn. And I don't call myself a disability advocate, but if I can shed some light on my disability in the process, then I've done my job. And I opened his eyes and many other eyes.
Now, you have a deep-rooted love for pop culture. You've been quoted as saying that despite the challenges you face in your life, pop culture has always been there for you. Can you explain to our listeners how pop culture has provided sanctuary, comfort, and inspiration to you over the years?
Sometimes family life isn't perfect. People argue, people fight, people disagree. But pop culture I could always watch a TV show that I love, or watch a movie that I love, read a comic book, or now, what I've been doing for the last almost 10 years, collect Funko Pops.
That's awesome, man.
I have over 200 of them.
What is your most prized Funko Pop?
I have a couple of them that are not even released in America. Like, I have Jeffrey the Giraffe from Toys R Us dressed as Batman. That was a Canadian exclusive for Toys R Us.
Were you a collector growing up? Were you into like Pogs or comics or cards or anything like that?
I was a CD guy. Now, you're of the generation that will remember this. At some point in the 90s, the late 90s or the early 2000s, they tried to bring the art of the 45 record to CD with the CD single. You remember CD
I do
singles?
recall, yes, I do recall.
That was my thing. It was just music. It was videotapes. I'm a huge Nickelodeon guy. Pop culture has really informed what I do professionally, but also just in life.
I remember I had two huge CD books that I kept in my car at all time when I was like 16, 17, just started driving. You remember those huge CD books?
I still have
I
them.
love it. And you would just keep that in your car. Someone, you get a passenger, you just hand it to your buddy, say, like, hey, flip through them. There's about 400 CDs. Pick one.
This is really bad of me, but I have two full CD wallets, mix CDs that I burnt 400 mixes in each one, and I'm going through them. I'm like, what was I thinking with some of these transitions of songs? Fun to go through them now.
Do you like a variety of genres of music, or do you find yourself mainly listening to pop music?
I'm very diverse, but there's something about the late 90s. I have a sweet spot for that era from when the Spice Girls hit to the US till about 2004. I feel like that was peak pop music, peak music in general, because you had grunge still. When you were listening to Top 40 back then, you could hear Backstreet Boys and then you could hear Pearl Jam the next minute. So
Love that.
it was very diverse and very important. And honestly, that is one of the reasons. If I were to do music radio again, it would be like a retrospective on those years. Pick a month of a year and just play the songs that were on the Hot 100. Because that, and I tell this to people all the time, the summer of 1999 is one of the best summers in music. It was so diverse, that playlist. I mean, you had things like Backstreet Boys, and then you had Pearl Jam's Last Kiss, which was big on Top 40. You never got the same song twice.
I've talked to some folks who have a little disdain for the music of their generation, and I said, oh, just wait till you're a little bit older, wait till you're my age, because I like 90s music now better than I did when I was alive in the 90s.
You know, I have other weird interests too. Like, one of my things that a lot of people my generation don't get, I have this huge, I don't want to call it obsession because it sounds weird, but interest with the Rosie O'Donnell show, her talk show from the 90s that was on. I'm also into puppetry and the Muppets and all those things too. And she would have Matchbox 20 on, and then she'd have Elmo on. The diversity of guests basically kind of informed what I do now here. It's great.
What about diversity turns you on?
Diversity at its core, what media and what life should be. Now, I'm not saying kumbaya. I'm not preaching to you about diversity. I'm just saying I feel like if you don't have a diverse mix of people, mix of music, mix of everything, then it's a bland world.
I'm right there with you. And I agree with you that at the risk of this sounding like a PSA, I love diversity and I actually seek diversity. I'm an opposites attract person. My wife is a different ethnicity than I am. Many of my friends are, and I like it. Something about it attracts me. Maybe it's that Paula Abdul opposites attract stuff.
Yeah, nice pop culture reference.
Thank you,
Yeah, I
sir.
love it.
Thank you, sir. So, you know who I was way into growing up? I was a huge Michael Jackson fan, the king of pop, if you
Oh
will.
my God, me too.
I mean, I was even like putting on the glove, doing dances in the living room. I loved Michael Jackson.
Now, you're older than me, but like, what was your peak Michael era?
It's a great question, Bob. And you know what? I like all of his albums. I'll go back to Off the Wall, his first solo album. I'll go back to not only the Jacksons, but the Jackson 5. I mean, I like all iterations of Michael.
It's so funny that you brought up Michael. Michael was one of my first pop culture obsessions. I knew the Jackson 5, of course. One of the first things I remember vividly watching. I was 6 years old when it was his 30th year in music as a solo artist, and they did this special at Madison Square Garden. Chris Rock introduced him, and like a bunch of people were performing with him, and it's such a great special. Michael is very important to me, and he's very important to me now with my fiance, and I'll tell you that story too if I could get into it.
Please do.
My fiance is not a pop culture person. She's an orca conservationist. She loves
very
orca
cool. Whales. Love that about her.
The movie that propelled her to love these beings was, you guessed it, Free Willy.
Will you be there?
What I did to surprise her was I got in touch with the actor, the kid from that movie, and he came on our show and she co-hosted it with me.
Super cool, man.
That was just a cool moment that we could share together. Like, it was the fact that I could do that and use my power of connecting with people and doing what I do to create a moment for her, that meant a lot to me.
You know what I like so much about Michael Jackson? Obviously, a massively talented individual. Having said that, an incredibly sensitive person and soul. I find many, many artists have two personalities. One is the stage presence. It's like a private and public persona. The public persona is this incredibly electric stage presence. And you might think that person is like that all the time, 24/7. But actually, it's the exact opposite. When Michael left the stage, he was introspective, sensitive. I like that dichotomy about him.
That's exactly what I try to do with my brand. I want to be approachable. I don't want to be a showman, but I also want to be like, hey, I do this. Check it out.
I'm a huge believer of substance over style. Style's important, and you got to catch people's attention. I don't really care about style. I care about substance, and I mean that in the art that I consume, too. When I go see a movie, I don't care about explosions and special effects. I like substance, and I think you, Bob, are a man of substance.
My favorite movie ever is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Gene Wilder version?
Yeah. It is the perfect mix of whimsy, sarcasm, and darkness. It is just a perfect film.
I think you truly do embody that. I do. You know, you are a type of person that has a cool bio, but immediately when I start talking to you and our listeners start hearing you, they kind of feel like you're just their friend.
That's really the goal. That's truly the goal.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Yeah. What would you say to a listener who perhaps is you, facing extreme physical limitations, but they have a dream? They've got something burning inside them, an internal passion. What is your advice to that person present day who is you when you were a kid?
At the risk of sounding like Nike, just do it. Don't overwork yourself, because that's what I tend to do. I get so fixated on something that I forget to focus on myself. Just take it slow, but never give up.
Bob, I sincerely thank you for your time today, brother. You are a really cool guy, and I'm just honored to be connected to you in this fashion.
And we have to give credit where credit is due to my brilliant audio editor, Nate Beagle, for connecting us.
Big shout out to Nate. He's a cool guy, no doubt about that.
And I'm so glad that we're able to talk today.
Guys, you can check out Bob at djbobshow.com. Also on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and Google Podcasts, it's DJ Bob Show. His IG, X/Twitter, and Gmail is djbobrunkle.com. Bob, once again, brother, thank you so much for telling your story and being exactly who you are.
Thank you.